Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football. On Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Ready for your next big move? The trip from the fridge to the couch. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Pat and Evan, hello.
How are you doing, Joy? Are you well tonight?
Very well. So, Man City against Arsenal at the Emirates. Raheem Sterling does his thing. Leaps. Did you have a leap like Sterling?
No.
It's okay.
Sure.
Different times.
Although, somebody said that to me recently, just a couple of days ago. You didn't score many headers. Actually, I did. Every single time I scored a header, the commentator would say, and a very rare header by Pat Neville. And I think, yeah, you say that every time.
Ryan Giggs had about 10 years, I think. And then eventually people realised Giggs was a good header. I think it's the winger thing, isn't it?
And the height thing as well.
That kind of helped. Yeah.
To be honest, I wanted to keep that secret anyway, because if people don't think you're any good in the air, they leave you alone. So you get more space. Any player worth his salt, if he's put in a position where he... I mean, it's a decent leap, but in actual fact, he was all on his own. No one was near him at all. So it was an odd one, because that first wee period during the game, I mean, the utter domination. I mean, they held the ball totally. They were in and around the Arsenal box, and you just thought, matter of time. But in actual fact, they didn't create a huge amount of more for the rest of the game. On the other hand, Arsenal produced the square root of nothing at all. Absolutely nothing at all. Really well outplayed. And I suppose it's a different thing. I'm sure that the commentary team were saying the same. A complete, utter domination of the ball. So it's hard to score against you when you haven't got the ball.
Well, it was reminiscent to Spain around that period a decade ago, wasn't it? They would often win games 1-0, but they were 1-0 hammerings. I mean, 1-0 was plenty. And I was listening to Gary Neville on his podcast, who's in the stadium. So this is kind of what I wanted to throw to you, because I'm not getting the full stadium view all that often. But he was drawing the comparison with Man City last year, where often when Man City had possession high up the field, it was just far too quick and easy a route right through the heart of their defence to straight at their goal. And he was saying the very clean and easy, it seems, thing they've done is that they have Stones, and obviously Diaz now is a very good player, out of possession now. This is when they're high up the pitch. And Cancelo and Zinchenko, or whoever's right and left back, stand pretty much in front of them, pretty centrally, and you have Fernandinho as well. So in effect, you have this block of five. You've got those three, and then you've got Stones and Diaz behind them, and then obviously goalkeeper. And suddenly, if you turn Man City over high up the pitch now, block of five, it ain't nothing.
There's another thing I was watching with them. They changed the system quite a few times. We set it out, you know, we look at it, we think, oh, that's a 4-3-3. But it isn't. It really isn't. You know, because Zinchenko will spend a lot of time up the park. Zinchenko can be absolute anywhere. And I was watching him at one point, and I'm looking at him thinking, tell me that's not what I think it is. And there was a period of time where the old WM formation, which I don't know if you know the history of this, I'm sure you do, but if you go all the way back to, you know, the Hungarians in the 50s, and then after that you had the Swiss did this Varua, the bolt system, and then it was WM, and you think, they're doing a WM just now. I was like, what? You can't go back 50 years. You can't do that.
But that's so interesting you say that, because we were talking about a year ago and I was very excited because I had just read a Nuno Espirito Santo interview in the Sunday Times. He's very impressive, talking about all sorts. And he was saying he thinks the WM formation is going to be back in a big way and he wants to be the first one to crack it. So you know, you're now telling me Pep has cracked it.
But I don't know, there was a part of the game I'm looking at, I'm thinking, It does. It really looks like WM. And I'm thinking, this is history. This is like a history you thought you could never go back to. I mean, I thought 4-4-2 was going back way far. This is wow, man. Yeah. And it was just a period of time. And it, And it depends on where Cancelo goes and all that sort of thing. And of course, it's completely and utterly fluid. And in reality, it's more like the Dutch kind of, you know, fluid system. It's more like that. But there's just wee periods and you think, no, you've done that. And it's, and it was, I don't know if it was deliberate, but there was a little period where you just thought, ooh, that looked a wee bit like that. And it was interesting to see because, you know, I've heard it talked about in coaching circles in the last few years a little bit. And I'm just wondering if there are one or two beginning to flirt with the idea. You know, it's interesting. Lots of different systems around there. And a lot of them are just kind of a little bit of a touch up of another system. Or just a little 10-yard moves of a couple of players. I mean, I've been studying Atletico Madrid for the last couple of days. Because I'm going to cover the Chelsea game. And their system's an interesting one as well. Which, you know, they've got three, then they've got the one in front of it, and then they've got four, then they've got two.
Right.
And you don't actually come across that very often. And it's intriguing to see how teams will react to that. And some systems work with it and some systems don't work against that.
Yeah.
But the fact that particularly the Brits for a long time were just so static, but lots of other teams. But I think everyone's looking at everything different because I'm sure I've said it before, there's not a increasing, you just get better systems all the time. No, that system will work with that one, but it won't work against that one, and you have to move them about a little bit. And it's only the really clever coaches that are able to do it, and are able to do it in game. And of course, you have to have clever players that need to be able to do that as well.
Right, okay. So Atletico go 3-1-4-2. I'll look out for that tomorrow night. Yeah, I'll talk to you about Chelsea in a minute, actually. And on the WM before we leave it, what's the great selling point of that? Why would the WM have intrigued Nuno a year ago? And maybe we'll have to see over the next few weeks. Maybe he likes it too.
When you think of the back line, you've got two at the back.
Yeah.
So you've got two centre backs who can play fairly wide, right? So instead of having a four or a three, you've got two. But you've got three in front of it, but they can be wing backs. So the two wide ones can back. So you can be four when you want it to be. But if they two go, then the one in the middle of it comes back in to make it a three when he needs to.
And that's Fernandinho, I presume.
Yeah, so Fernandinho or be it Jorginho at Chelsea or whatever. So you get two wing-backs go, full-backs become wing-backs and they go a little bit. And then the other guy sits, and he would be Zinchenko, they used to call it, and he would come back into the three. I'm sorry if anyone's listening to this and this sounds like a history lesson.
No, it's fine. It's really interesting. No, go for it.
And the Chinka would come back. And it was a very South American thing. The Chinka used to do that. So it's kind of, you read all those old books, which I used to read rather boringly when I was a kid, and you learned all these wee things. And then you think, well, that's all gone now. Let's look at the new thing. But in actual fact, it's not really a new thing. It's kind of another version of an old thing. And that's the thing I suppose you learn as you go along.
Sure.
Everyone tells you that everything's brand new, when in reality, it's kind of new wording a lot of the time.
Hey, look, Pat, there are only seven stories and all that. And did you say, Chinko, was that like Spanish for five? Is that what I'm hearing there?
Yeah. Chinko. Okay. So he was, Chinko's, like, the only one playing in British football, Jorginho, right? He's the classic. So everything comes through him. He's deep, but he's not a deep tackling midfielder.
Yeah.
To some degree, Pirlo would a wee bit like that as well, when the deep line centre midfielder. But he always knew when to cover in that area. But he's a creative, and he's a controller, but he's a really deep controller. And that's what that position was. And it was a position that was never much used. Just now, as I'm speaking, I'm looking to my left-hand side down at the corner, and I think there might be a goal in that game, which was...
There is. Brighton have equalised on 54 minutes, so it's now 1-1 at the Amex against Crystal Palace, yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, the first goal...
I didn't see it.
Oh, wow. You got to see it. It was real. I mean, there's back heels. This was an absolute cracker. I'm looking at this closely. They'll have a look for offside here, in this one here. But I think it actually comes off the defender, so he might get away with it. But the back heel from, is it Mateta?
Yeah.
The new player. Is it one of the crackers?
Is it
one of the great ones? Because it's just because the way he does it, it's almost as if it's dragged by a back heel. And I thought Palace were getting battered to death before that.
Right.
But it's a real quality one. So if anybody get a chance to watch that,
I will check it out. Still, I think my favourite back heel is the one Henry scored. And Sky used it in promo videos for years afterwards, where he's on an angle and he, I mean, the defender has him. Like he's you know, backed upright into the defender and just, boom, catches everybody off guard. Genius.
I would argue Zola's back heel volley from across
is
one of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I suppose if you're talking about heels, it's not a back heel, but the Scorpion kick is to some degree a back heel. And there was a Giroud scored one for Arsenal a while back. It was a couple of, a couple of weeks, but it's a great skill. To be honest, I have to say, I think Brighton deserved to be winning this game. They were complete domination for most of the game. So they probably deserve to be back up 1-1 just now. But anyways, it's interesting to talk about those tactical things without getting a bore about it. There are so many more interesting technical things that are going on just now in the game. And Brighton themselves have been very interesting in that. But at the moment, I go to Manchester City games, which I go to a lot. And I'm always intrigued because he does tinker with that and he asks people to do things. And everyone at the moment's noticing that Cancelo's free, as it were. He's allowed to go. And when he goes, the centre-back moves over and the deep-line midfielder moves in. We get all that stuff. But is Cancelo been a wee bit unmarkable because you don't know where he's coming from? In an odd way, who was it that did that last year? Sheffield United had three centre-backs, but one of them would go unexpectedly. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's the same sort of idea. So it's dead interesting things going in that sort of way. But when you get right down there, Manchester City have just got better players.
Definitely helps. Definitely helps. Pat, there are Everton fans listening tearing their hair out. They're like, how are we 15 minutes into this chat and you haven't brought... I mean, like, we've been 21 years and you're still faffing on about Man City winning another game against, like, 10th place Arsenal. So, first Merseyside win at Anfield since 1999. Thank you very much. Obviously, look, for Liverpool, it's unprecedented almost. They're, like, going back 100 years for this run of form at home. But for Everton, this was very, very sweet, wasn't it? They were good as well. They were good value for it.
Again, not to give it all to the manager, but a coach got it right.
Go on. Tell me how.
I don't know, he's changed it quite a lot recently. I mean, I've liked the way he's changed it. I mentioned to you, we were talking last week, that I was so impressed with what he was doing against Spurs in the 5-4 game, where he was adapting it so quickly, really, really quickly. And he had to, because it was 9 goals and everything was changing. But when he stuck out that team and there was no Calvert-Lewin, obviously not fully fit, but it looked like the back five again. And that was the discussion we had last week, I don't know if you remember it, where he went with a 4 and then he made it a 5 and then he lost a goal and he made it a 4 again. And it all revolved around where Coleman was actually playing and that dragged Digne around to make it a 4. And because he's got adaptable players like Godfrey and Holgate, but mostly Godfrey, he can adapt that really, really quickly. So when he put out that team against Liverpool, most Evertonians, and certainly when I was looking, I was thinking, oh my goodness, he's basically playing 5-4-1. He's leaving Richarlison up in his own, and it's a kind of going to be one of them backs to the wall ones, and boy, they're going to have to defend well. And my heart, I'll be honest with you, my heart sunk a bit. And you shouldn't do that with Carlo. You should think, no, give him his time. Let's see what he's going to do. And it did. It worked an absolute treat. It helped that Liverpool are not at their best at the moment. Let's be honest about it. But the defensive work that they did there, they had to have Pickford in good form as well. But the fact that when Liverpool or anyone now play against Everton, you've no idea actually now. How are they going to play? The same group of players, particularly the 4 or 5 at the back, you don't actually know what they're going to do. So you're setting up against them. It's not actually easy to set up against them because you don't know exactly what they're going to do. And when you've got likes of Digne and Coleman wide, they can fly forward unexpectedly as well. So you kind of have to cover them. And the idea, I think, Coleman being in that area and Holgate coming out and killing that area where Robertson's crosses were supposed to come in, that kills a lot of it as well. So the spaces where Liverpool in the past have been fantastically good at creating chances is the wide areas. Okay, kill the wide areas.
Yeah.
If you possibly can. And you do that by playing deeper line wing backs. And it's kind of, it almost sounds easy when you say it now, but you've got to be brave enough to do that and understand that you're leaving other players.
Everything sounds so easy in retrospect. You know, like who was saying that was going to happen before the game? Like, you know, it was very hard to know what they were going to do. And Coleman, it was interesting, was interviewed afterwards. And he was, one, praising the way Ancelotti set up the team. You know, you don't just say that for nothing. And two, he was saying he understood his job, or a lot of his job, to be to just follow Robertson around. Yeah. But so, depending on where Robertson was, Coleman could either be as part of a back five, or he could be squeezed right up on Robertson, and there was a fluidity there, and somebody would cover his right back position or drop back in when Coleman dropped back. So, I mean, geez, you've got total flexibility there, and it's often an experienced player like Coleman who's making the key decisions. So if you're Carlo, you're kind of thinking, well, Seamus, I've got a good feel for you. I can trust you to work this quite well, and Coleman obviously can.
And I mean, I didn't hear that in an interview. It's dead interesting.
Yeah.
He's explained exactly what I was trying to say, but a lot quicker than me.
Just follow Robertson, yeah.
Yeah, just make sure you kill that. Mm. Kill that space. And because he's such a big part of it. And to a degree, you've got Dina doing the same sort of thing over the outside as well. And again, it makes absolute sense. But the big thing is you need to know some of the capabilities of your player, right? Obviously, you need to know if he's a good tackler, a good runner, a good cover, knows where to position himself defensively. Then there's the other bit on top of that. Do I trust your match intelligence? And I know that sounds like a small thing. It's massive in these moments because you're playing against players that only need a yard or two, right? But of course, you can trust.
Mm.
There's others that are good players and play that position and might look as good, but I wouldn't trust them. I absolutely wouldn't trust them to know when to do that adaptable thing that you're doing. Whereas Seamus, you won't get it right every single time. But he's more likely than most to get it right. And it was intriguing to watch him. I had a wee bit of a thing when I was watching the Spurs, when I was at the Spurs game, watching him thinking, right, I don't think I want you to go now. Because he was flying at one point. That's not the time to go. But he was right. He knew. He was right. He felt that position. He felt the moment. He kind of felt the game around him. And he didn't really get it wrong very often. He chose the times when to go. And this was his thing as well. And if you've got a job and you've been told, right, kill Robertson if you possibly can, and if you can add something else, that's great. That's what he's done. And it's good that that knowledge that he's got of his players. I'll be honest, I was slightly surprised, more than slightly surprised, especially the way the team was lined up. But, you know, they rode the luck when they had to ride the luck.
Yeah.
But they played really, really well. And if you look at it now, it can't be a fluke anymore. It's too long into the season. They're levelling points with Liverpool and they've got a game in hand. It's not a fluke. He's just got an incredibly well-balanced side and he knows the capabilities of his players now. And that's with a group that's not a big group, that's had a lot of kind of injuries to key players at various points, but he still managed to keep it going. So, no, it was brilliant. I watched it afterwards. I didn't watch it live. I was at the exciting game that was Burnley versus West Brom, and honestly, there was one massive thing about the Burnley West Brom game is exciting. Is that for a moment I actually think I'd kind of bent space time, and I'd gone back 40 years and watched football from 40 years ago, because honestly, I had a sore neck at half time.
Okay.
What going on here? It was beyond awful. It got better in the second half, but it was beyond dreadful. I thought it was in a time warp. But you got to say, you know, the conditions didn't help that as well.
One last point, and we're going to repeat ourselves here, but it's just we're touching on Liverpool. When Jordan Henderson went down with his pulled muscle, the camera cut to Klopp, and there was a smile/grimace, which just said, okay, if we can just shake hands on fourth place now and just wrap this up and I'll see you all in August, that would suit me fine. Like, we're done here. This is just extending the pain almost. Jamie Carragher said during commentary, I don't know if you watched it back on Sky or whatever, but he just said at a certain point, and probably, like, to be fair, with 15, 20 minutes to go, you know, and it was only 1-0 at that stage, he said, Liverpool just do not look like scoring anymore. And Martin Tyler sort of said, geez, that's a big thing to say. And they made the point that Leipzig gifted the goals midweek. He said, yeah, just do not look like scoring, and they didn't really, and we've seen them a number of times now chasing the game, and there's just not that same sense of fear in the opposition.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's like everyone, Liverpool will play against every team who will lift themselves against Liverpool now. For two reasons. One reason, if you get a result against Liverpool, it feels better than anything else because they're the champions. But also, they can smell a weakness. Mm. And they can smell a weakness. It's, you know, a couple of players, you remember watching Sam Allardyce taking West Brom there, and they kind of, for a period of time, smelt a weakness. And if you're seeing that in Burnley going there and various other teams going and smelling a bit of a weakness, it's a bit, you think, oh dear, if anyone's going there and smelling it now. It's not that they're bad players. We know that I've got weakness through the centre-back's position because they've not got natural centre-backs there. That's just unfortunate for them. But the other side of it is it's what I keep on saying. I don't like always repeat myself. It's well over a year since when I've expected this to happen because they're knackered.
Yeah.
You've asked too much. Yeah. You've asked too much of too many players. Be it Salah, who will, yes, he'll still produce genius and brilliance, but will you get those energy levels for him for every single game? That's not humanly possible to keep on doing it as long as he's done it. And the expectation of those high levels is, they used to say, you know, a great sprinter will peak 4 or 5 times a season. Well, they're asking these guys to peak at a stupid amount of times a season. And, you know, it's not a shock that it's beginning to waver a little bit. It really isn't a shock. The shock is it's taken quite so long. Mm. So well done, Liverpool. I keep on going back to this in case any Liverpool fans think I'm sort of laughing at them and abusing them. I'm not. I'm so impressed that they lasted as long as they did. Mm. But you have a problem. And my sympathy runs out in one area, and it'll run out with any team. Oh, we've got lots of injuries. We've not got any centre-backs left. You should have bought one. Oh, we couldn't afford it. Well, in that case, you should have sold somebody else. You've got a big budget, and you've got to manage that budget. Now, sometimes you can get unlucky for a period of time, but it's been unbelievably obvious that squad isn't deep enough for a long, long time. So sympathy, limited, I'm afraid, at this point.
I do want to get your thoughts on the Callum Hudson-Odoi substitution, but obviously if people were listening from the start, you're a fan of the global game, and this felt like a significant week in the handing of the torch, and suddenly Mbappe and Haaland. If it's not official, I mean it's official really, really soon. There was just something kind of extraordinary that they did it one night after the other, and obviously Mbappe was against Messi. There was just this sense that, okay, if they're going to make a documentary in a few years and pinpoint a moment or a week or an evening, this is kind of it. So Mbappe and Haaland, give me the thoughts, give me your views. I don't think we've talked about them too much before.
Yeah, well, it is intriguing because when you look back, it's hard. I always try to step outside the era I'm in, which is a really hard thing to do, right? But there was the Pele era, wasn't there? So that was his era, yeah? Mm. So you know, and there are eras of players. We have just coming out of the Messi-Ronaldo era. That's their era. There's other brilliant players that have been there, but it's their era. That's it, right? And in 20 years' time, that's what we'll look back on. There is no doubt that it will be Haaland's era. There is a little bit of doubt, but not much doubt, that Mbappe's will have, he'll be part of it as well. Who's going to be the bigger of the two? I think it's Haaland by a mile.
By a mile?
I honestly do.
By a mile, okay.
I think he's that. I cannot see a weakness. I really can't see a weakness. I can see a weakness in Mbappe, which is not his pace, not his skill, not his ability, none of that. That's all world class. Not 100% sure about mental attitude all the time. Haaland, there's nothing, no problem, there's nothing. There's not a thing wrong there. Everything's brilliant. And I would ask you the question now, like I'd ask anyone the question. So, by the way, another name that's often thrown in is Neymar. I'm afraid in 20 years' time, you're not part of the eras.
Mm.
He isn't.
No.
He's a great player, but he's not one of them.
On Haaland, by the way, because I was reading an interesting piece by Ken Early in the Irish Times, and he had an interesting stat where he said Haaland touches the ball fewer times per game than 90% of the forwards in the big five leagues. Like 90% of the forwards in the big five leagues fewer touches than all of them, which is kind of interesting. Why is that, or what is it about his build-up play that might explain that statistic?
I'd want to spend a lot more time watching him.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of us, we've seen bits, and I've seen some games, and there are long parts of games where you don't see a lot of them. But if he finds space, it's almost in a very, very different way. You know, when Kevin De Bruyne gets the ball and there's a pass on, the ball will land there.
Mm.
More than anyone else, it's okay, he'll see it. And it's okay, he'll deliver it. Funnily enough, he didn't do it against Arsenal because he was just come back from injury. But generally, he's the best in the business, or just about the best in the business at that. Haaland's the same with goals and with opportunities. You know, if there is an opportunity to find a space and create a space, he will find it. You know, and so, most other strikers might find it or probably find it. And even Harry Kane's a great chance of finding it. When you look at Haaland, you think, no, he will find it.
Right.
And when he gets here, he'll probably score.
Very interesting. So, I mean, based on what you're saying, it mightn't be the Haaland Mbappe era. It could be the Haaland decade. He could be that far ahead.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
Mm.
But if I was, in reality, if I'm Manchester City and I need a striker just now, and I need a striker to make us the best team in the world, I think I'd pick Haaland.
Yeah.
Really, without actually much waiting about. Because there's things that Mbappe does that other players at City would do. But Haaland's different. Completely different. He's given you something that nobody else has given
you.
And maybe that's the thing that... And I think, I don't know if there's many teams in the world at the moment that would actually take Mbappe above Haaland, because he's got everything, and he's 2 years younger as well, which helps a wee bit.
Geez, we should do a chat some quiet evening after the Maradona era, 90s to now. Does Zidane get an era? I really want him to have an era. Yeah.
So did I.
You're not so sure he does, though.
I don't know. Of course you get Maradona era. And we know the ones that get the eras.
Yeah.
He might have had half an era.
Half an era, you know, yeah, I think we're stretching.
The horrible thing is, and the one that I want to give, you might want to give it to Zidane, I want to give it to Cruyff. I mean, if there's not, I'm gutted that there's not a Cruyff.
Oh, does Cruyff not get the 70s, no?
Maybe,
I would say the 70s is Cruyff and Beckenbauer, no?
Yeah, Cruyff, I would say Cruyff.
Cruyff,
yeah.
Okay.
You know, so...
That's his era. I think the Cruyff era comes between Pele and Maradona.
So, I mean, and of course it's people... You can argue all night about this. I mean, Twitter will go mad shouting at me for this.
Sorry, I haven't seen Cruyff play 90 minutes and I'm saying that, but I'm saying it.
But that was genius. That was ridiculous genius. Now, and I would make the argument with Cruyff is he's had a bigger impact than any of them.
Yeah.
Any of them, and including Pele, including Maradona, including them all, his impact in football, I would argue, is the biggest of any player I've ever known.
Yeah, well,
of what he did afterwards.
We had John Giles on. I remember the night he died a couple of years ago now, and John, you know, great judge, and lived through all of this. And he said, like, when you add up his playing career and his managerial career, you kind of have to come to that conclusion. You know, has anybody had a bigger impact in football? Come here, sorry, that was an interesting tangent, but I've about 4 minutes here. Thomas Tuchel, Callum Hudson-Odoi substituted. He was brought on half-time against Southampton. 31 minutes and 17 touches later, he's hauled off. Tuchel says, I wasn't happy with his attitude, energy, counter-pressing. We demand 100%. I feel he's not right or in the right shape to help us. I wasn't happy with his body language. We cannot lack energy, 10% or 5%. It's not possible. He was in trouble when he came off the bench against Sheffield United. He was in trouble again today. It's on him to improve. Other than that, he was okay. I've made up that last line. That's a fairly scathing assessment of Callum Hudson-Odoi. On taking off a substitute 31 minutes later, young player, do you kind of, not so sure about this, or do you kind of quite like the laying down of the law?
It's complicated. Mm. Right, first of all, I have no problem with Tuchel doing it. Absolutely none.
Okay.
You will not be surprised to hear that I went through the game with a fine tooth comb afterwards, right? And I looked at every single part of it. And it's not the touches. It's actually not the touches. It's everything else. So he comes on, and I would say for 10 minutes, he's fine. He's absolutely great. He's getting in positions. And you could argue he gets an assist to the penalty because he lays in the ball with mount for the penalty. Okay, that's fine. And he had a couple of little interesting areas, and he was going beyond, and I'm really happy with it. And then it slipped away. And then he started jogging places instead of running. And you'll remember we've talked a great deal about Paul Pogba, how it really riles me when he plays a ball and doesn't move.
Mm.
It really riles me. I do think, no, we all do that, mate. I don't care how famous you are. We do that. And if you don't do that, you're not in the team. And that's why he wasn't in the team.
Mm.
I'm absolutely 100% about that, right? And I watched Callum and I thought, not sure you're doing that there.
Okay.
I'm not sure you're doing the right things there. You've got to be on it the whole time. And others who haven't his talent. And by the way, there's a good argument along with Mason Mount, he's been the best player for Tuchel.
Right.
Since he's come in. So I'm not saying he can't play. I'm not saying he's not been great in what he's done. But I think he's looking at the personality and thinking, right, if there's a weakness in this personality and that fades at all, I need to get on top of it. I need to nail it.
Mm.
And oddly enough, I'm okay with him doing it.
Okay.
I would put two other points, and here's the complications of it. Did he do it to him in Neymar?
No.
And I don't think he did. And that's not my idea. I seen that in the newspaper today and I thought that was brilliant. He didn't do it there. I think he would argue, I didn't do it there and I should have done it. So I'm doing it now.
Okay.
And you're keeping top of him. So I'm okay with it. And as long as Callum reacts the right way, Callum will be far better for it. Far better for it.
Okay. Very interesting. Listen, that should be a good game tomorrow against Atletico. It'll be a good litmus test of where Tuchel is. So we'll talk about that next Monday, amongst other things. Pat and Evan, thanks a mil.
Pleasure as ever. See
Cheers,
you
thank you. Pat Nevin with us every Monday. I should let you know the latest at the Amex. It is Brighton 1, Palace 1 after 78 minutes on the clock. Our football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites. The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.